You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Same Old Arsenal podcast. As Amanda often says, hit the like button if you support a team that happened to be top of the league, and get your questions and comments in. We are going to talk all things Arsenal, all things Leeds United, some things about tickets, and a little bit of a chat about overseas fans. Joining me as a quartet this evening, in my top left-hand corner, Amanda, how are you?
Good, very good, very, very good.
Are you excited to talk about a nice win again yesterday?
I'll never say it's getting boring ever that we keep winning and we keep having great podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah, it's never boring. Seven in a row. Very happy. And we've also got Mr. Cook in my bottom right hand corner. How are you doing, sir?
Mate, I'm very well, thank you. And you know what? I'm even better this weekend because I got to see your lovely face in the flesh for the first time. Well, not the first. Why am I saying the first time? The many a time.
Stop it, you. You make me blush. And joining us as a special guest is Freddie Paxton. How are you doing, Freddie? You all right?
Very well. Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, it's fabulous to have you on. Fabulous to have you on. Listen, we want to relive every single part of yesterday, except the unpleasantness that was Liverpool absolutely bending over against Man City. If you've got any questions, put them in the chat. But let's talk about before the game had even kicked off. So James mentioned I met him for a beverage or two or four beforehand. And we had to watch the unpleasantness of the Liverpool, what was the Liverpool fall apart. But Amanda, what did you get up to beforehand? And you met somebody special, I think.
Yes, I did, actually. And she's just come in the chat and said this. Hello, just wanted to tell Amanda it was again amazing to meet her yesterday, and of course you too, Carl. So we met Jenny, who is from Nebraska, and I'm going to just show you a quick picture of us as well. And she's from Arsenal America, so she's come all the way from Nebraska just to watch this game. And I'm just trying to find the picture of where it all is, and we're going to show it now. So that is me and Jenny outside the Armory just before the game. Hi, Jenny. Aww. I said I'd put this out. It was lovely. You know how much I love the overseas fans. And I always try, if I know anyone's over, especially the Gooner Gals, as I call them, from America. That's what they call themselves. And we had a great chat outside the Armory. And she loves the pod as well. So it was really, really lovely. A nice pitch, a nice chat. And, yeah, it was great. I mean, we wanted to come and meet you and James, but unfortunately the pub was like too far away at that moment. And I wanted to chat with everyone. And the buzz outside the ground, because of the beautiful stadium wraps, everyone wants to watch, like take pictures and look at them. I keep looking at the flag one. I absolutely love it. And I keep seeing different flags every time I go of different supporter groups around the world. So, yeah, big up to Jenny and her boyfriend or husband, Lance. And now I know that Nebraska's in the Midwest because I thought it was more east. But
Well, there you go. There you go. And Freddie, you obviously, I don't think you could make it to the game yesterday, but let's talk about just the build up to it from your perspective. Did you have much nerves beforehand, particularly when the lineup was announced and no Bukayo Saka?
Yeah, look, I've been taking the pessimistic route all season because usually I'm very over-optimistic and very positive. But it served me well this season to be a bit pessimistic before every game and just try not to think too much about us winning every game and just, yeah, take a pessimistic route. And then obviously we exceed expectations every week at the moment, which is great. But I was nervous beforehand. Obviously, Saka's our main man. He's our main goal threat. He's our talisman. So, you know, obviously to see him absent from the starting lineup was a little bit of a worry, but obviously having signed Trossard and considering how well he's done since he's come in, and obviously Martinelli being so good in front of goal this season, and obviously now having Jesus back as well, and hearing Arteta saying in the week that he is closer to his best again now, and he's, you know, he's able to cause that chaos that is so typical of him in and around the box. So, you know, it's nice to have those options, and obviously it softens the blow of not having someone like Saka available. And obviously we saw that with the way that we played. I think obviously we weren't at our very best, especially in the first half, but once we got that second goal early in the second half, then we were fully in control, and it was great to then be able to bring Saka on a little bit later in the game, give him some minutes and ease him back into it rather than having to rush him on to save us. So all in all, very positive.
Yeah, it certainly was positive. I think it was an interesting one. So I think there was some illness in the camp beforehand, and that's why I think Saka was rested. But I think just beforehand, when we were chatting, James, before the actual match, I think I remember saying to you that, oh, this feels like, is Arteta with one eye on the Liverpool game? Is this a bit dangerous? But in hindsight, obviously, I think there was a bit of illness in the camp. But as Freddie said, that rotation and that depth that we've got, it's pretty impressive now, isn't it, when you think about the way that we were able to dispatch Leeds?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only thing that would have made me a little bit worried going into the game in terms of team selection would have been if we'd have had Jorginho and Holding in the same 11. That would have, for me, been a little bit of a cause for concern. But I think you mentioned at the time as well, like you just said, that he was kind of thinking too far ahead potentially for that game against Liverpool, which he has been guilty of doing something like that in the past. But I think the beauty of bringing in a player like Trossard is that because of his maturity, you can bring him in for someone like Saka, and you don't lose any quality across that front line. I think, you know, arguably he plays his best football on the left-hand side. And as we've seen in recent weeks, he plays it through the middle as well. He wasn't as effective on the right, possibly. No. But that's still where his assist for the Jesus goal came from. So it's great to have a play like that we can bring in. And I think when you look at Mudryk and how he's doing at Chelsea, I still, you know, I don't think we can speculate on how he would have done in an Arsenal shirt, because he could have still done very well under Mikel Arteta. But to have someone like Trossard, who has slotted in, got 7 assists and a goal already in his time at Arsenal, you just can't argue against that. He's come in, done a job brilliantly. And okay, he's not 21 years old, he's not 22 years old. You know, we're not going to have him for the next 10 years. But to have someone that can slot in at this stage of the season, where we just needed someone who could come in and deliver and bring output straight away. He is, you know, he's paid his transfer fee 2 times over for me already. He has been a fantastic addition to this team, and it's great that we can bring him in and rest kind of any one of those front three and have no drop off in quality.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that the January signings that we made in Trossard and Jorginho, right at the beginning of the window, you say to Arsenal fans, that's what you're going to get come 31st of January. And I think most of us have probably gone, meh, but on the 31st of January, when that's coming in, I think a lot of us were like, yeah, well, that could add us the depth. But Amanda, from your perspective, did you ever perceive that we would have such success from the likes of Trossard? I thought, I knew he was good, but I didn't realise how good he was.
Well, you know how I am, Chris. I don't judge anyone. Everyone was ranting and raving over Mudryk. I didn't even know who he was. I don't really take much notice until they put an Arsenal top on and start to play for us, whether they're good or not. So you could have had Messi coming in and I still would have gone, well, we've got to see how he plays for us. I don't judge anyone. So for me, Trossard seemed like a good fit, but it did also seem like a desperate thing because we didn't get Mudryk. However, I didn't ever dream that he would slot in this quick, this easy. And the fact that when they announced yesterday, I got to my seat and didn't even realise Saka wasn't playing. And I went, oh, I was a little bit like, okay, he's on the bench though. Or maybe he's resting him, a bit tired. He'll come on for 20 minutes. I didn't know he was ill the day before. And I was okay with it. He definitely needed a rest. However, Trossard slots in like he's been there 10 years and he plays the Arsenal way. He plays the Mikel way. He just fits us like an absolute glove. And I'm over the moon with him. I love him. I tweeted about him last night saying all those people that threw their toys out because he was only Leandro Trossard and not this Mudrick fella. And I think you should go and look at the stats now for Mudrick and go and look at the stats for Trossard.
Yeah, I think it's you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, like the comparisons, because I think Mudrick in an Arsenal team would be much more effective. He'd be highly effective compared to what's happening in that absolute dumpster fire that is Chelsea at the moment. And if you put Trossard in that Chelsea team, he's probably going to do better than Mudrick because he's Premier League oven ready, basically. But I do think you have to take those kind of comparisons with a pinch of salt. It's done. We move on. He can languish on his 200 grand a week or whatever he's on at Chelsea and not be competing for the title whilst we're just see if we can keep on trying to win games. But that first half, Freddie, I thought the first half was, I don't know about you, and I don't know if this is just me, but my natural pessimism, I think I share that with you in that until we get the first goal, I'm always saying to myself, whether I'm in the stadium or watching it at home, this is going to be that week. This is going to be the one week when we don't click. And so that first 30 odd minutes or so, it didn't feel, it felt to me, just watching it in real time, like, oh God, this is going to be one of those games. Did you feel like that yourself in that first half until that first goal went in?
I did, yeah. I felt that we weren't really imposing ourselves in the way that we would obviously be looking to. I felt like there was a few times where we gave up possession a bit too easily. Even just the way that we started the game, it was very similar to that Bournemouth start, you know, where they're on the attack straight away. Yeah. Ramsdale was forced into a save. You know, they had a few shots on target yesterday and on another day, one of those could have gone in. So, you know, there was that little bit of a worry. What I will say is that Arsenal this season, as we've all seen, have tended to be really good from those losing positions. So even if we do obviously end up going behind, there's always that feeling that we can come back and get something. I think it's only us and Crystal Palace have sort of retrieved or come back from losing positions and like an unbelievable amount of times this season. So we've always got that. But you want to avoid putting yourself in that position. And there was that worry yesterday that perhaps we end up falling behind or maybe it's just not going to click for us this week. I remember when we dropped points when we drew to Southampton, was it earlier in the season? And things just weren't really going for us that day and we didn't manage to sort of kick on and get ourselves back into it. But yesterday, obviously, once we got that penalty, which at first I thought looked a little bit soft until obviously seeing it back and seeing that there was contact to his knee, then obviously that allowed us to kind of calm down a little bit, go a goal ahead, and being at home, we then eased into the game much more. But yeah, absolutely. In the first half, there were a few moments where I was feeling a little bit tetchy.
Yeah, me too. So just a quick yes or no round the table before I go to Cookie on the actual penalty. As Freddie said, it probably was a penalty. Yes for you, Amanda? Was it a pen?
Yeah. He kicked his knee. It's quite blatant. It's hard when you're in the ground. So I just rely on people that are at home. And my dad went, they said it's a soft pen, but he wasn't watching it. So for me, I was like, I thought it was a penalty straight away. And I'm not normally like that. But yeah, for me, it was.
It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it, James? Because Luke Ayling goes down and then he sort of extends his leg and it just sort of is, I think it's studs or something, or his toe just catches Jesus. And VAR are never going to rule that out. If there's contact and Jesus goes down, they're never going to rule it out, are they?
Yeah, I mean, he does emphasise the contact, but I suppose you kind of got to make the referee make a decision these days, don't you? So, I mean, yeah, it is emphasised, but at the end of the day, there is contact. It is a penalty. Had it gone to VAR, it would have been given as a penalty. And to be fair, I have to give props to the referee for actually awarding it and not letting the ball go out of play and then letting it go to VAR, because I think there's been so many instances in recent weeks and months this season where officials have just let play run out and relied on VAR to make that decision. So fair play to the ref for making it on his own terms.
Yeah, definitely. And then the man steps forward, Gabriel Jesus. I tell you what, if anybody in that stadium needed that, Amanda, I think definitely it was him. And I think Odegaard went to actually pick the ball up, and then he just handed it to Jesus. And as soon as he did that, I thought, brilliant. But I was reading today that he hasn't actually got that great a record on penalties. I think it was Arseblog that might have mentioned it this morning. But right thing to do, and good to get him off the mark, wasn't it?
Yeah, let's just talk about the first 30 minutes. I was bored. I sat there and I said, I was to Carl, I'm bored. The atmosphere was weird. There was atmosphere, but you know what I think about the drum? Not going to mention it anymore, but the drum. I just was a bit like, it wasn't dull and it wasn't a bad game, but the first 30 minutes I was like, and then obviously the penalty change, the minute we get the penalty, I think for me, I didn't stress the whole game. I stressed more the day before. I don't know. Sometimes they say, don't they, the penalties are, you know, for you, you've got the penalty. Sometimes you shouldn't take it. But I mean, over the moon. I mean, I'm even more over the moon that he scored from open play as well, which we'll come to. He needed that so badly. Do you know what it's like? It's like he's never been away. He doesn't even look like he's got to come up to match fitness. He's already got it. He was everywhere yesterday. And yes, Chris, he needed it. I don't watch penalties. I have to turn away. So I stood up and turned away. And as I was looking at everyone behind me, they've all got their phones out. I said, why have you all got, I don't know these people. I went, why have you all got your phones out? I don't get why anyone would film a penalty being taken. I'm too stressed to even watch it, let alone film it. But yeah, and it was a lovely penalty. I love the penalties when they're down the middle. I really do. That's my sort of penalty. I'm always saying to everyone, down the middle, because the goalkeeper always goes left or right. They never just stand there. So yeah, big up.
Yeah, there's that during, you say that, but do you remember during the World Cup when we were in those friendlies and there was, I think they went overseas and somebody, one of the Arsenal players, and I think PSG, it might be, no, Lyon, one of the Lyon players, tried to do a Panenka and the goalkeeper just stood there and just catches it. And I always think, yes, dangerous. You're always dangerous going for going down the middle. But yeah, good penalty. Puts us 1-0 up. We go in at half time. I think as soon as we get that second goal, Freddie, quite early on, that Ben White goal, the game for me was about how much Arsenal could deliver it. But are you in the same position as me? Because when I watched that in real time, it felt to me like the goal actually took an age. Like maybe it's just the angle. And obviously you're watching it on TV, so you could just correct me here. I'm wildly off. But from the angle that where my seats are, half of the people around me just sort of stopped and went, what's just happened? Did that actually go in? But it was great finished. And also, can I get you to give some props and hand some flowers out to Gabriel Martinelli? Because I thought his assist was fantastic.
Yeah, I know what you mean when you're in the stadium and obviously from certain angles, sometimes it's difficult to tell how the ball's actually going to make it across the box from such an angle. And obviously to see Ben White coming in at the back post was a little bit surreal as well. At first, I thought it might have been somebody else, but the way that he came in, it looked pretty natural. But you're right. The way the ball travelled across the box, the gap that Martinelli squeezed it through to have that vision, you know, it might just look to some people like he swung a, you know, a hopeful ball across the box, but it's more than that. It's the acknowledgement that someone's going to be making that back post run. It's the timing of it. It's to squeeze it through that small gap, as I said, to put enough on it, but also not too much. You know, it's a lot more difficult than it looks. And to have that sort of vision and be able to produce a cross like that to give someone a tap in at the far post is, you know, is brilliant. So yeah, I was also really happy to see Ben White get on the end of it. I'm a big fan of his. I think what he's done in terms of, you know, being sort of, let's, you know, we all know that he's versatile. We know that he'd played at right back before, but let's face it, he was shunted out because Saliba and Gabriel are such a good partnership. And there's no shame in that at all. But the way that he has made that position his own has become so dependable. He's been, you know, the best in that position in the league, you know, alongside, let's say, Trippier and maybe one or two others. But what he gives the team from there is so good. And to see him pitching in with goals like that and just getting into attacking positions is brilliant. So yeah, I was really pleased with that goal, and obviously it then set us on our way to win the game comfortably. So yeah, was very happy.
It was very, very good. And before the game, we were having a debate over best right back in the league or even in European football at the moment. And this is the bit where I need to bring in Mr. Cook, because he just very bluntly just said to me, well, who's better? So I'm going to give you a few minutes to wax lyrical about your man, Benny Blanco.
Oh, God, where do I start? I honestly can't think of anyone better than him at the minute. I mean, let's not go into Europe just yet, because there are some very good players out there. But if we're just looking in the Premier League, who is better? Honestly, name me someone that is better. Trippier's had a good season. I mean, Reece James is always injured. in terms of consistency, output, versatility, reliability, Ben White is your man. And what he's brought to this Arsenal team over last season and you know, the way he's raised his game this season, he's just, I think he's another one of these guys that we can talk about being a world-class footballer. I don't think that's an exaggeration. It's crazy that he doesn't get into the England team. But I think I mentioned before, he's going to be one of these great club guys that probably doesn't get a look in this current England setup. And I'm fine with that, so long as he's always available for Arsenal, which he always is. But if he can add this extra layer to his game where he's, you know, he was already making overlaps, but I think he's making them to a better level now. But if he's progressing even further to a place where he can be in the box and finish opportunities like this, I mean, he's a very intelligent guy. So I've got absolutely no doubts whatsoever that he'll know when to get into those positions. And now he knows he can deliver on it. I'm confident we might see one or two more goals from him in these last nine games of the season, because he now knows he can do it. As I say, very intelligent player, very intelligent person. Loved his post-match interview as well, by the way. He knows exactly what he's doing with his words after the game. But true professional, fantastic footballer. We're very lucky to have a player of his caliber at Arsenal.
Yeah, I loved it as well. It was, what did he say? He said something like, they were talking about the Man City Liverpool game. He was like, I don't know, I don't watch football. And you just like that is just Ben White for tea, isn't it, Amanda?
But did you hear what he said about being ahead? And he said, we've never been in this position before. There's a lot of noise outside. We just play our game. We just get on with it. He doesn't actually like football. It's so bizarre how he speaks about. He's got no love for it, but he's absolutely 100% passionate about being our right back and winning the league. It's so weird. I've never heard a footballer say I'm not interested in football. He just isn't. Yeah. Doesn't come from that background at all as well.
I mean, he was very good yesterday. I do think that
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The connection between him and Trossard inevitably is not going to be the same as what it was with Saka. But as we talked about earlier, the ability we've had to be able to rotate in players, that's actually going to be really, really useful. Ben White, however, is one player that we cannot rotate out. Like, literally, it's funny, with the Tomiyasu injury, he's almost become kind of like Partey, in that if Partey's out injured, then there's a big dip in class. If Ben White goes down, like, touch wood, you know, cross everything, that he stays fit for the next nine games. And as James said, you know, not having him having played lots of international minutes and stuff like that, maybe that ends up being a blessing in disguise. But so we're 2-0 up. It's second half. We're pretty cruising. And then Mr. Trossard steps up. I mean, we score on 47 minutes, which is pretty good, straight after half time, to make us feel comfortable. And then Gabriel Jesus comes along on 55 minutes. And you mentioned it earlier, Amanda, so I'm going to give you a minute or two just to talk about that goal, what you liked about it. And then we'll get some thoughts from Freddie as well after that.
Right. So we had Martinelli assist Ben White. We had, who was assisted?
Trossard.
So it was Trossard with Jesus,
yeah.
And Xhaka was assisted by somebody else.
Odegaard.
Right. And I love it. I absolutely love all this, that there isn't just one assisting everybody. They're all doing it. If Martinelli's not scoring, he's assisting. So he assisted yesterday instead of scored. And I just love it. And the fact that he scored from open play, he really needed that as well. As he gives so much to the team. Look, we're not losing when he doesn't score. He is just pivotal. And I love seeing him. And as I said, it's like he's never been away. the match fitness is incredible. He looks incredible. Lovely goal. What a lovely goal. And I think it meant more, you know, because it was Jesus and it wasn't a penalty and it was from open play. And I just love him. I love everything about him, everything he does. I just absolutely, the fact that he's won the Premier League with City, the fact that he's got a winning mentality is what I said the day he signed for us. I said, forget all the football. I don't really know much about him. I've watched him, obviously, when he played for City. And my City mate said to me when he signed, good player, needs to add more goals. But he has become the winning mentality, and the fact that he has got that mental strength to go all the way to the league. Him and Zinchenko have got that, you know, and it's so important. Plus his football, plus everything he brings to the pitch. He crosses that white line. He's like a tiger. He does not give up. And I absolutely love him. The thing is, when someone said the other day, who's your favourite player? It is so hard to choose. I fight between Saka and Odegaard all the time. However, Jesus, Martinelli, Partey, Ben White, Gabriel. I mean, come on. It's really hard. Zinchenko, I absolutely adore. Xhaka, we'll get him to him in a second. I mean, it's like a rebirth, honestly. Yeah. It's just incredible.
7 goals this season.
I actually, when he headed the ball in for that goal, I was like, is that Xhaka? You could write, I'll tell you something, someone should do a film about his story from beginning to end at the Arsenal, because what a story. You wouldn't believe it when he was booed off that night and he's throwing the jersey on the pitch and everybody wants him gone and he was not great in the position he was in. People kept saying he's just not a DM. Well, he's not. Now he is playing in the right position. But this is about Jesus. Love him. Yeah. Keep him fit to the end of the season. He's given us something extra. And what I'm loving still is so many pundits to still stay. No, it's still going to be City. City are going to come in. Let them carry on. I'm happy for that. I don't want anyone to tip us.
Yeah. Freddie, on Gabriel Jesus, I don't want to cut you out of the conversation here, because I think it's quite an interesting one. It's quite a streak. I'm sure I heard somebody say he's quite a streaky player. And so if this is the start of it for the beginning of a little run for him, I mean, that's going to go a long way to seeing us over the line, if, fingers crossed, we can win the title, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, I think, you know, we need him fit and firing if we're really going to, you know, finish this season strongly. We were under no illusions that his injury was potentially really damaging for us, and obviously we managed to make do really well in that period. But now we need him to contribute well towards the end of the season, which is why it's so encouraging to see him getting back to you know, full match fitness and obviously pitching in with goals now. I completely agree with what you said, Amanda, about how encouraging it is to see different players chipping in with goals as well. I think I read somewhere the last time that we had four players in double figures for goal contributions in a season was like 2012 with Giroud, Walcott. It would have been Cazorla and Podolski. So it tells you how long it's been since we've had that sort of all-round contribution. And even in the league in general, I think it was a couple of seasons ago that any team had four players in double figures, and it was Man City. So, you know, it shows you how important that can be. Jesus, I think, as well, just on that goal that he scored from open play, why that was so encouraging for me is that obviously if you were to pick one gripe with him, not a gripe, but, you know, if one thing that you want to see a little bit more is sometimes I think in front of goal, he overthinks it a little bit. He's so, you know, he's so good on the ball and he wants to take it round players. And sometimes I just want to see him be a bit more clinical. And there's, you know, Arteta has been very honest about that. Jesus himself has spoken about his frustrations sometimes this season where he felt like he could have had more goals in certain games. And so it was great to see him just make that instinctive run, Trossard twisting and turning. It was like watching Hleb or someone like that, a bit of like a Hleb Arshavin type player, put that ball in. And then for Jesus just to finish it so clinically like that, it was really encouraging for me. So more of the same, I hope.
Yeah, me too. The thing about what I liked about that goal is it really felt like a tenacious sort of poachery type goal. It was like a little bit scrappy. It was a good run by Trossard and he's cut the ball back, and Jesus just has the hunger and tenacity just to sort of squeeze in between the defenders, just almost toe poke the ball in. that's the sort of goals we need to see. That's the sort of goals that we need to be scoring as well. Guys in the chat, thank you very much for everybody. John, Fiona, Maka, Carl, all putting some interesting stuff in the chat. If you've got any questions, whack them into the chat box. Amanda will star them and then we will answer them right towards the end. Within
Can
the last
we just say
10,
hello to someone very special?
Go on.
This is our Man United fan who comes on the show every week. I'm really sorry, Barnaby, but all of us are pretty happy that Newcastle beat you. We don't like your team, but we love you. That's all I'm going to say. We don't like
actually,
your team.
Actually, as an aside, there, we'll get back onto the game because I want to talk about the Leeds goal with Cookie in a minute. But are you happy? Like, I'll start with Freddie and then I'll ask Cookie. Are you actually happy that United and or Newcastle won? Because we've got to play Newcastle in about 3 weeks' time. And I could really do with them not being in the running, because if they've got nothing to play for, then maybe it's an easier trip to St James's. What do you reckon?
I'm happy that United lost. I hate United.
Yeah,
am I. I really hate United. So, but I get what you're saying. That trip to St James's Park is going to be a tough one. So I get what you're saying. But yeah, United to lose every game, I'm happy.
Okay, fair enough. I take it you're the same then, Amanda.
Yeah, I don't want United to win a throw-in, let alone a game. I just can't stand them. But this Barnaby is so lovely. I feel quite bad for him. He comes on every week. He's been with us since I interviewed Mark Goldbridge on here. So he's like, you know, he loves our pod. So I always want to give him a shout out. And he's just said, look, very frustrated with the result, but we move. The thing is, I think a lot of United fans thought, and I did too, I can't deny it, that come February time, I thought they were in the running. I was more worried about them than City because they were playing better than City. But consistency is key, as we know, and they haven't been consistent. So, I know what you're saying. I mean, Newcastle away is the potential banana skin. But let's just take one game.
Yeah,
time.
We might get time to look at the fixtures and get terrified about our running after we've talked about the game. But James, Leeds' goal, I thought that was a bit lucky because it took the ball across. I can't remember who put the ball across to their goal scorer, but that took a deflection. And then when he struck it, that also took a deflection off Zinchenko. Just a bit unfortunate. Is there anything that we could have done differently, do you think?
I think we were just in cruise control at that point. And to be honest, maybe we needed that goal to wake us up a little bit. It's frustrating to concede because we should have kept a clean sheet yesterday. I mean, I can't think of, apart from those early chances Leeds had, can't think of anything that they created in the game. So to not have the clean sheet, I really do feel for Aaron Ramsdale because I know he'll have been fuming about that and he's probably got one eye on that golden glove at the end of the season. So, yeah, I do feel for him. But in terms of conceding the goal, I mean, I don't want to get ultra critical because I really don't think in the grand scheme of things it matters that much, to be honest with you. In terms of goal difference, it would have been good to have an extra goal on the board. But I mean, Zinchenko probably shouldn't turn his back. Don't think you can blame Ramsdale for not getting to the ball. It is what it is. I'm not too worried about it. We went on to score and have the final words at the end of the game anyway through that lovely Xhaka goal, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But yeah, I don't think there's too many reasons to read into it.
Yeah, I think I'd go back to Ramsdale in that All or Nothing documentary where like we just won and he goes and sits down and puts his head in his hands and he's just really cheesed off. And Edu comes up to him and says, cheer up, we've won. And he'll be particularly frustrated, I would have thought, Ramsdale, with conceding that. And particularly when there's not really a lot he can do about it. But Amanda, from your perspective, what do you reckon on that goal? Would you just chalk it off as a unlucky and move on?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was just talking to Carl about this before. I do actually believe that, you know, when they like focus on, oh, we can't get a keeper clean sheet, I don't really care. If we're going to win 4-1 every game, I don't really care. Now, obviously, if it comes down to goal difference, and that's what we're discussing, yes, every goal matters. We're 2 goals behind City, I think. I don't think it's going to come down to goal difference, to be honest. I really don't. I don't think it's going to be like 1989. When we needed to win 2 clear goals. So I'm not fussed about it. However, obviously, I don't like goals being scored against us. I think we went to sleep a little bit, if I'm honest. And I think that, it's very unfair. And I know how you and Cooks think about holding. And you weren't concerned for Leeds, but you're very concerned for Liverpool. And I feel that he knows that. I'm not saying he reads social media or anything like that, but he feels that tension. You know, he's not Saliba, but he's not terrible. And I thought he played all right yesterday. But I feel that if Zinchenko didn't turn his back, it might have been different. But I haven't really focused on it, if I'm honest, Chris. You know, if it was 1-0, yeah, it would have been more. But we've won 4-1.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Perhaps I'm wrong and I should be looking at that.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Because as James was saying, as Cookie was saying, we were in cruise control. And then there was, Freddie, there was just that moment that there was, I reckon there was probably about a 5-minute window after they scored where it felt like, and again, this might just be the fan in me sat in the stadium. I've had a few beers. And so therefore I'm suddenly nervous because I'm thinking, you know, I was at the Newcastle Arsenal 4-4 all those years ago. I was in the ground when that unpleasantness unfolded. So I'm wearing those battle scars. What was your kind of view from that perspective in terms of once the goal goes in and then that sort of 5-minute window, and then give us a bit of thoughts on the goal that Xhaka scored as well?
Yeah, I think obviously we've all been scarred in the past of seeing Arsenal teams of old that have wilted under pressure or have given silly opportunities away and ended up putting themselves in positions that they shouldn't have been in. I do think that, yeah, you're right to say that once they scored, obviously they had the wind in their sails a little bit, but I was always comfortable that we'd see the game out. I was always, you know, I always felt that we would. And obviously it was maybe, what, 6, 7, maybe 8 minutes after that we scored Xhaka's goal, which I think is credence to the point that I make about the fact that there wasn't too much panic. I think, you know, we just get on the ball and we'll create another chance before the game ends. And I think also that's why perhaps it's easier not to dwell too much on the fact that we conceded, which can be a bit frustrating. But the fact we finished the game then by scoring another one kind of buries their goal a little bit in the memory. But yeah, I think Xhaka's goal was brilliant. The ball from Odegaard was great. And to see Xhaka making that run and being a threat in that way, as he's done so often this season, was brilliant. It's incredible. I know we've spoken about it briefly already, but the turnaround from him and what Arteta's been able to do to bring out the best in him, because I remember interviewing him a few years ago, and one thing that's always stood out about him is firstly how much he cares about the club and what he does, but also how much of a good leader he is and how respected he is by other people. So all of those things were there, but then for Arteta to absolutely nail it on the kind of playing side and find him a role that Xhaka has openly admitted he wasn't sure that he could do in the first place is testament to the job that Arteta's doing, and also to Xhaka's professionalism to give that role a go and give it everything and look how it's turned out. So yeah, it's just funny watching him, you know, to see him getting on the end of chances like that and just, you know, scoring goals consistently. I think he said after the game that he'd promised his wife a goal for her 30th birthday and he delivered. And it's just funny that he could be so confident about doing that now because that's the player that he is. So fair play to him. Yeah, very, very happy for him.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic goal. It was one of those goals, if it was a centre forward, that's the sort of thing that, you know, I know I invoke his name on an Arsenal podcast at my peril, but it's the sort of thing you expect to see the likes of Harry Kane scoring or, you know, a Marcus Rashford or a Callum Wilson. You know, those are the sort of goals that
we've got breaking news.
What?
Potter has been sacked.
From Chelsea. Whoa.
Wow, I'm not surprised. I said day one he doesn't fit them. I've said it day one. Yeah, everyone's saying it in the chat. Potter's been saying.
And this is what people said when Todd Bowley brought him in. People said, is he going to be the kind of guy that invests in a project? We need to remember that Arteta, when we hit our nadir under Arteta and we were really struggling, you know, we were down there in the league a few seasons ago, you know, a lot of people were questioning Arteta and his methods and whether or not we'd made a mistake, but the club stuck with him. They really did stick with him. They were very, very vociferous with, no, he's not going anywhere. Whereas that's been a bit quiet from Chelsea of recent weeks, I feel. And they've never been a club that, I'm going to get everyone's view on this actually, just a minute or two on that, seeing as it's breaking news. They're going to get, they've never been a club that's willing to, you know, invest time in their managers. So James, I'll go to you and then I'll go to Freddie and then Amanda, just some thoughts on that Potter sacking. Let's just keep it to a minute each because
we
don't
play
really
Chelsea
wanna... Yeah, new manager bounce, isn't it?
Oh, God.
James,
come on.
Yeah, It's a difficult one with Chelsea. I'm actually surprised at the news that they've sacked him, because I was kind of under the impression that they would give Potter until the end of the season and almost treat these next 9-10 games for them as effectively a long pre-season ahead of next season, because they've given him, what, a long contract. There are all these players that, you know, how many of them are Potter players? I'm not so sure. If any are Potter players, I'm convinced that someone like Mudryk wasn't his signing. It feels like a lot of these players have just been kind of mushed together and they've just said, here you go, you know, go and do your thing, make it all work. And I mean, when you're in an environment that is that chaotic, it's going to be difficult for any manager. And obviously, I wouldn't be surprised they had some sort of bounce. And I was saying to my dad the other day that it would be the most Chelsea thing ever if they finished about 12th or 13th but won the Champions League. And maybe that's what they're trying to do, because at the minute with Graham Potter at the helm, there's no way they're going to get past Real Madrid. I still look at their team and I think, you know, there's enough talent within that squad. If someone comes in and makes it right, then there's no reason why they couldn't click and make it work. But it's just kind of, you know, it sums up Chelsea that they've gotten rid of him kind of so early into his tenure. I do think he wasn't the right fit. But like I said, I am surprised. But when you're coming out after games like yesterday against Villa and he's saying that it was a good performance, I mean, come on. I don't know if any of you watched that game, but my God, they were really, really poor. But I just hope it continues. But I just sincerely hope that they don't come to Emirates and put in a performance, because we really need to win that game.
We do. We need to win all of those home games. Just Freddie, just a minute or two. Any thoughts on that Potter sacking?
Yeah, to echo a lot of what you just said, Cookie, I think they got their strategy all wrong. So they brought in a manager who obviously had a very strong handle over the players that he signed when he was at Brighton. He implemented a really strong system, and that was, you know, what characterised that Graham Potter team and why they were good. But obviously, as you said, he's been sort of given a very inflated squad. They've signed all these players, expected him to do something with it, and clearly that's not been easy for him to do. So I think that was a little bit, you know, it's been difficult for him. I don't want to make excuses for him, because I do think he was out of his depth when you manage a club like Chelsea, although I don't have much respect for Chelsea as a club. I don't want to call them a big club, but there is an expectation there. And you know, it's a different kind of job to what he's ever had before. And I think, just to finish my point, to agree again with what's already been said, you know, if they look at this season now, the only thing they can salvage from it is doing well in Europe. And they had a manager at the helm that, you know, has shown no evidence whatsoever that he would be able to win in the Champions League. Therefore, they've probably, you know, they've made a smart decision to get rid and think about how maybe they can win the Champions League. But I just hope the next manager is an even bigger failure at Chelsea. That would please me a lot.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, because Potter is a project manager. They decided to bring in somebody as a project manager, and then they haven't actually given him the tools to develop his project. They've basically just chucked. They've tried to go Galacticos. They've got a Galactico approach for signings with a project manager, which is just bizarre. Like they'd do better to have somebody a bit like an Ancelotti in, who's just going to put his arm around players. But Amanda, just any final bits before we move back onto Arsenal, because I don't want to turn this into the Chelsea fan podcast.
No, I actually think he fits Spurs more than he did Chelsea, and it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up there. That's the sort of club that I think he could manage. I feel he was a good manager at Brighton, I really did, but I just think Chelsea was a step too far for him. I never liked it from day one. I couldn't put my finger on it. I said he doesn't fit them. He's not the Chelsea manager. No, that's it. Just breaking news while we were recording.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, let's get back to the Arsenal. Let's talk about, we were talking about Granit Xhaka just before you gave us that breaking news, Amanda. What I find really interesting is, 2 to 3 years ago, I'd have chats with my mates, Arsenal mates, and the ones that were saying, you know, what's happening with Arteta, or the people that weren't convinced by Arteta, I'd heard a few people say, who has he improved? Well, the adage of you can't teach an old dog new tricks is clearly not true, because in footballing terms, Granit Xhaka is like 29 years old, going on 30, and he's basically retrained into a different position that, you know, we've never seen. You know, he's been a deep-lying, almost quarterback-style defensive midfielder, and we're playing him as a more advanced left eight this season. Arteta said, and it's been well documented, he came out and he had a chat with Xhaka in the summer and said, look, I'm going to change your position. Can you do it? If you can't do it, no problems. We'll shake hands and I'll find somebody else. Granit Xhaka came back, this is what Arteta has said, lighter, fitter, stronger, and willing to change and adapt his own game. So I really think that there's a lot of people that haven't been convinced by Xhaka. I've always been a big fan, but I think there are a lot of people, and Kiki, I'll bring you in on this to get some thoughts as well. I really think a lot of people this season, particularly, even those staunch detractors of Granit Xhaka, have probably come around to him this season, certainly. What do you reckon?
I just think that, I mean, I remember being on a podcast with you and you asked me that question. Do you remember when you said, would you give Granit Xhaka a new contract? And I said, no, he's not good enough. I said, no. However, he has been played in the wrong position since he started with us. This is his right position, and this is where he plays absolutely fantabulously well. And would I give him a new contract now? Absolutely, yes, I would. I want him there. Absolutely. I think he's been brilliant. I hold my hands up. Didn't want him when he did what he did that day. When he threw his jersey on the pitch, you don't do that. But absolutely, as I said at the beginning, Chris, write a story about him and that be made into a fantastic football film, because he's possibly, I said possibly, going to be in a Premier League winning side to the point where he used to get sent off and his fouls. Touch wood, I've not seen him foul this season the way he used to. I've not seen any idiot tackles or lunges or, you know, you never, and you know, we've stopped saying now, isn't it, if that was Xhaka, because Xhaka doesn't do that anymore. He's just not that sort. He's playing in the right position. We have said this, but very impressed with him, very pleased, and he works his socks off. He's definitely, definitely a brilliant vice captain.
Yeah, it's great to have those kind of experience. Like, we keep talking about this being the youngest Arsenal team, but it's great to have people like Xhaka who have got the experience. I think on the fouls or the cards, I always find it quite funny. Like, he picked up yellow card, Xhaka, but if you look at the amount of times he's had red cards in his career, he hasn't been sent off as much as people seem to suggest. But James, I want to keep you in on this Xhaka loving, because I know you're like me and you've always been a big fan of him. I think part of the reason why he hasn't been fouling as much is because we're playing him in an advanced position now. So he's not required to be in positions of danger where he's isolated. I just don't think that happens anymore. And that's probably a result. But James, just some thoughts from you on the Granit Xhaka debate.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, Xhaka, isn't it? Because he's been through so much in his Arsenal career. He's played with so many different players alongside him. And I remember when he first came into the team and we played under this kind of rigid 4-2-3-1 under Wenger, and he was partnering Aaron Ramsey or Coquelin or whoever it might be. I mean, that's a real throwback for you there. And then we kind of moved to that 3-4-3, and then we had the Emery years, and then we had the beginning of the Arteta tenure where he was partnering the likes of Ceballos. But now we're playing him further up the pitch, and there's not that reliance on him to be a defensive midfielder, because he's not that anymore. I never think of Xhaka as a defensive midfielder in any capacity this season. But by allowing him to be higher up the pitch, he is still tackling and he does make the occasional foul, but he's not making those sort of fouls or tackles in positions that are dangerous to us in any way, shape or form, because they're normally in the, you know, final third of the opposition half. So it's a huge benefit to us. And the fact he's adding goals to his game, amazing passes as well. Like, his ability to pass the ball and find someone is absolutely exceptional. But for me, he's been one of those, again, another one of the, I'm not afraid to use the term world-class, because he genuinely has delivered kind of consistent 8 out of 10s this season, apart from maybe a slight dip after the World Cup, a very, very slight dip if we're being ultra critical. But right now he's right at the peak of his powers. And I think it's going to be really interesting come the summer, because he's going to be 31 in September and he's not showing any signs of slowing down. I mean, in his entire tenure at Arsenal, he's been here, what, 7 seasons? Playing the best football by a country mile. And if he keeps his fitness, his consistency, his availability, I mean, for God's sake, he played 2 games for Switzerland before he came back into this Arsenal team at the weekend. So he's certainly not a guy that's showing any signs of fatigue or old age in any way, shape or form. So I think if we can have him playing to a similar level next season, keep part in the team and add a Declan Rice in, I mean, the options you've got there are absolutely sublime. And I honestly think he will be at this Arsenal team until his mid-30s, maybe not playing as regularly as he is now, but there's absolutely no reason why he can't continue in this rich vein of form for years to come if he keeps his fitness.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, because he's not exactly somebody whose pace is going to leave him, because he's never had any pace. He's somebody that has stayed relatively, you know, touch wood, fit. And there's that a very famous phrase that a lot of people say, which is the best ability is availability. He's got that. I'm with you, mate. I think we could get a couple more years out of him. Look, I want to sort of wrap up this Leeds game, because I want to talk a little bit around seats and ticketing. Because there were some empty seats yesterday. And also, I want to ask you guys how terrified you all are about Liverpool. But just before we do that, is Amanda, then Freddie, and then Cookie, anything final from the, as we wrap up, anything final from this game that you just wanted to highlight that maybe I've forgotten about, because I don't write all of the points down and I tend to make it up as I go along?
No, it would have been lovely if Martinelli would have scored when the goalkeeper came out. It was a good shot and it was cleared. No, I thought I really enjoyed it after the penalty, then got into it. We came out second half. He shifted it a little bit, didn't he? Brought Ben White up a little bit more. Trossard was more into it. Lovely to see Saka come on. But I do say that every time a player goes down, I'm having a heart attack. I honestly have anxiety. They can just be kicked slightly and they go down rolling. You never know if it's acting or a bit dramatic or not, and I can't take it, you know, I just can't take it. But that's just me just being dramatic and worrying about every single game. But we've got 9 to go. That was our 10th yesterday. So no, just generally, look, we fully deserved it after the 30 minutes of a bit of subdued, and roll on the Scousers.
Yes, roll on the Scousers. So again, Freddie, anything from that game that I haven't probably highlighted that you just wanted to pick up on, or do you just want to tell me how terrified you are about the fact that we play Liverpool next weekend?
I think just one thing as a general theme, you know, that this Arsenal team, when you watch us, it's, you know, it's not just nice football, fancy flicks, talented players. We're a well-oiled machine. We're a well-coached team. You know, there's clear patterns of play. There's a clear identity. They all have clear roles and they're all clear on those roles. And it's just a joy to watch. I think we're a very good, disciplined team. And although I am feeling very, very worried about the impending trip to Anfield and obviously how the title race could play out, I'm just looking forward to enjoying the rest of the season the same way that I have been enjoying the season so far. I think that's important, because if you can't enjoy it when your team are this good, then, you know, what's the point? Look, that's not to say I won't be gutted if we don't win the league. Of course I will. I'm gutted whenever we drop any points, but yeah, I think we're a joy to watch at the moment, and I'm excited.
We really are a joy to watch. 23 wins, 3 draws and 3 defeats all this season. That's a pretty phenomenal record. 72 points. Like, we're scoring goals for fun as well. Like yesterday, 3.8 XG, off of 4 goals. You know, I need to update my priors with regards to Arsenal, and I'm going to start talking. Cookie, I'll bring you in on this to talk about the Liverpool fixture. And when I talk about updating my priors, I'm thinking about, you know, you and I were talking yesterday, and I was saying, oh, this absolutely shocking Liverpool side getting battered to Man City, but you can tell, you can bet your bottom dollar that they'll turn into the Harlem Globetrotters next weekend at Anfield. But as Freddie was just saying there, this is a good team. This is an exciting team. This is a team that, and Freddie said earlier as well, has come from behind. I think I saw something on Sky Sports today saying that we've picked up 15 points from losing positions this season. Like, that's pretty, that's five of our wins this season have come from losing positions, including being 2 down to Bournemouth. So there's a mentality of this Arsenal team that's better. And why can't we go to Liverpool and get a win? What do you reckon, Cooks?
Absolutely no reason why we can't go there and get a win. It's just, you would expect to see an entirely different Liverpool team to the one that you and me watched in the pub yesterday. I would be amazed if that Liverpool showed up. And they have got a good record at home. It's not been perfect. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen, they can definitely turn it on and very quickly turn it off as well. I mean, they beat United 7-0. They had a 2-0 lead against Real Madrid and got battered 5-2 on their own patch. So this is a very inconsistent and surprising Liverpool team, I think is the word to sum them up, really, because you just don't know what to expect from them. But I thought they were really, really passive in the game yesterday. And just mentally, they don't look anywhere near like the Liverpool team that we've seen. I mean, we've always kind of viewed them as mentality monsters, but their midfield on a technical level isn't anywhere near as good as it has been in recent years. I don't think their forward line is anywhere near as potent because Jota's come back in after that injury. He doesn't look the same player. If we were going to Liverpool when they had, you know, Roberto Firmino that was a couple of years younger, they had Mohamed Salah of last season or the season before, and they had a certain Sadio Mane in the team, I would be petrified going into this game. But the fact is they don't. And as good as Cody Gakpo is, as good as Jota can be on his day, as good as Salah is, he's a world-class player on his day. I think we're the better team. And I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting that. If we go there and play our game, we've got every opportunity in the world to win this. And if we could go to Anfield and do the exact same as what we did at Spurs, that would be fantastic. I don't think it would be as easy, but you've got to think, going into that game away at White Hart Lane, the atmosphere there would have been fierce going into it. The atmosphere going into Anfield will be fierce as well. If we just play our game in the opening 10, 20 minutes, subdue the crowds, you know, we don't even have to get an early goal. That'd be fantastic. But if we just show, you know, we're the ones imposing ourselves here, keep the ball, keep them at arm's length. I really think, and I said this to you yesterday, the game will be won in midfield. If you look at our midfield three, Xhaka, Partey, Odegaard, compared to the one that they had yesterday of Fabinho, Henderson and Elliott, ours should walk all over theirs. And I don't mean that to sound arrogant, but you look at them next to each other, Fabinho isn't the same player. Elliott kind of looks a little bit out of sorts in that role at times. Henderson is a little bit over the hill. We've got three players in their absolute peak there. And I'm getting ahead of myself. It definitely won't play out like this, but we're a fantastic team. And we all know Liverpool can be on their day, but if we want to really assert ourselves in this title race, we should go there and win, even with Rob Holding in the team.
Why are we focusing on Liverpool? All I've heard you say is Liverpool, Liverpool, Liverpool to Kirks. They should be worried about us.
Because he asked me they about Liverpool. What do you want a man to come
No, I'm saying like you're saying, I'm concerned about this. Look, I'm only concerned because it's a bit of a bogey side for us. They're not good enough to beat us. If we're on our game, we're going to beat them.
Don't talk like that.
No, Chris, we should. Listen, we're not talking City here. We're talking a very average Liverpool side. Look what happened to him yesterday.
What are you doing?
No, I'm not saying, but what I'm saying is Cooks is
going... Talk like that. Talk like that. If we've beaten them next Sunday, talk like that afterwards. Don't talk like that now.
I'm not talking like we've beaten them, but why are we so scared of an average side? You know, I'm not scared of them. I'm more worried going to Newcastle, okay? Before Newcastle, I'll be terrible. Before City, I'll be terrible. But before Liverpool, if we've got everyone fit and even Holding, right, I'm all right. I think we're going to do it. I think we're going to win at Anfield. And I'll hold my hands up, and if I sound wrong, I'm not like being cocky or anything like that. I'm just saying, all I heard out of Cooksey's voice was them. What about us? They should be worried about us. Their fans should be sitting there. And to be honest, they're going to want to lose anyway because they hate City. There's no way they're going to want City to win the league, but that's neither here nor there. I know what Unique is saying. I agree with you. That's what I said. It's a bogey side. I've been to Anfield so many times. I have only seen us win once, and that was in 1989. So I'm not going. So that you're all lucky on that one. But I think Newcastle will be harder. I will be petrified before Newcastle. So let them worry about us. They're pretty average. They really are. If we're on our game, we're going to beat them, Chris.
Right. After you've just cursed us, thanks for that. We've got 5 minutes left. Shall we go on to some questions? Do you want to take over the mic?
And loads and of questions. God. Thank you for all your questions tonight. And while I'm reading this all out, can you just go and press like, please? Thank you. It does mean a lot to us. Okay, so Robert Stevens, I do have a question for who would you start for next week's game against Liverpool, bearing in mind Trossard did get a hat-trick the last time he played there?
Shall we let our guests start with that, Freddie?
Yeah, go on, Freddie.
It's a horrible one to be given. I think how I expect us to start, I think, honestly, it will be Martinelli, Saka and Jesus. With Trossard as an option to come off the bench, who can obviously play in various different positions. There's obviously merit in saying that Trossard should start the game because not only obviously how well he played when he was last at Anfield, but also just how well he's been playing for us. Obviously, he gives us something a little bit different, and he's provided so many assists already. So, I can see why there's an argument for him to start, but I do think I would probably go with Saka and Martinelli out wide and Jesus down the middle, and then have Trossard to come on, because I think we'll definitely need to make that sub at some point. So that's the way I would probably go, but don't ask me why.
Okay, so we're going to let you answer this one, Freddie. Does anyone think we will win at Anfield when our record is so bad? I think we're going to win at Anfield. It takes a lot for me to say that.
As you said, we've all been to Liverpool away, so we've all got scars from obviously some good memories as well. You mentioned 89, but recent years, you know, we're all a bit scarred. What I would say is that, yeah, for the first time in many years, they'll be more worried about us than we are about them. I think if we turn up and impose ourselves, then we've got every chance. But obviously, Liverpool being at home and sort of how up and down they can be, when they're up, they're really up. When they're down, then, you know, they shouldn't be too much of a problem. So hopefully we get them on a down day. Do I think we'll win? I'm going to have to say, look, of course I fancy us because we are such a good team this season and we've got the wind in our sails. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's a much more difficult game than some people have seemed to suggest.
No, I'm not saying it's not going to be difficult, Freddie, at all. Okay, but if we're on our game, we should beat them. Carl Stark says, does holding potentially facing Liverpool fill anyone with a sense of dread? Cookie.
Not sure how to answer this one. I feel a lot more comfortable with Rob Holding after these past couple of games. And I'm still not sure what to expect from him going into a game against Liverpool, because in these past couple of games, he's not really been tested to the level where we can properly judge him. I would say his passing range has got a lot better. I think the players around him are a lot more comfortable to give him the ball than they have been in previous seasons. He imposed himself. He was first to almost every header yesterday. So there's no reason to feel, you know, borderline nauseous about him playing in the game. And I do something, even if he does start, it makes us a little bit more exposed defensively, but football is a team sport and the players around him are absolutely fantastic. So I'm not going to be absolutely petrified if he does start the game. And if that's, you know, at the expense of keeping William Saliba fit and fresh for potentially the game away at Man City, I think that's a decision that we've got to take. But It is what it is. If he starts, he starts. I'll be fully behind him, as we all will be. And he has played well in his past two games. So let's not get too downbeat about it if he does play the game.
Okay, Unique 79 again. Hi, Unique. I believe that if we beat Liverpool next week, we will go on and win the league. What do you all think? Chris?
I knew you'd give me that question, because I've been deliberately trying to avoid talking about winning the league, because I feel like I have... In the cosmos, in the universe of football, I believe that I have some sort of impact on how Arsenal perform, which is why I will never, ever say things like you that came out of your mouth about the fact that we're going to beat Liverpool before we've actually played them. But do we win the league? I think maybe we do, because in my head, I always felt like we needed the buffer of a minimum of 6-7 points. Now, we've got 8 points clear at the moment, but they've got a game in hand. Mm. And in my head, that buffer is Liverpool away and Man City away, because I think we've got a better chance of beating, even though Newcastle are doing all right, I think we've got a better chance of beating them. I do think Liverpool at home are harder than Newcastle at home. So if we navigate Liverpool with 3 points, so we're maintaining that 8-point distance, I think we then play Southampton, which again, you'd expect us to win. We've got West Ham after they've played in a Europa Conference League game, and that might be all they're playing for us if they get out of relegation. So if the buffer remains after Sunday afternoon kickoff next week, then I think we might, you know.
So then Carl wants to know, which team does Chris think are going to come second this season?
Man United.
Really?
No, I'm not answering it.
Okay. All right, let's ask Robert Stevens. I have 2 questions. Your top 4 in order. Second, we're not going to answer that, Robert. We're not going to do these top 4 in orders yet. Let's go a little bit longer through the season. I'm in control of the question, so we're going to answer your second one. What would your starting 11 be for next week's game against Liverpool, Freddie?
I mean, I think I kind of answered it with what I said about the front three. I think most of the team picks itself. I think we spoken earlier about where the game can be won and lost, and I think it was absolutely right to talk about that midfield area. And if you know, it's been great this season to largely have Partey available more than he has been in other seasons. I don't want to jinx it, but I think that most of the team picks itself and that midfield is where I'll be looking at where the game can really be one and where we can really impose ourselves. And then I think, you know, with the front three, I would go Jesus down the middle now that he's got some momentum back. And as I said, have Martinelli and Saka out wide just because they have been so dangerous this season. I think Trent can be got out on that right-hand side. And obviously Saka is our main man, as I mentioned earlier. And then we have the option of Trossard and others potentially to come on and help. But yeah, that's the way I would go. I think the defence is, you know, self-explanatory. Obviously, if Holding has to play, then he plays. But if Saliba's fit, then he comes back straight back in for me.
Chris Cooks, anything different to that?
No, I can't echo that sentiment enough, really. It's the Saliba Holding question. Arteta did sound a little bit more positive in his press conference on Friday when he was talking about Saliba. So my hope is that they've looked at this game against Leeds and said, we can bring Bob in for, you know, that game at home. Let's give William Saliba another week of resting and then hopefully he'll be fit for Anfield.
Very true. Chris, we are over an hour, but we need to talk about the ticketing.
Yes, let's finish off with that.
Yeah.
So we were at the game yesterday. Three of us were at the game yesterday. And I saw a few people on Twitter, and you and I were talking about this on Twitter, Amanda, who had made comments around, you know, the seating situation. Or I think it was the Gunners Town or Gunners Pub messaged me saying, oh, some people were saying that was in the first few minutes there was empty seats because people were late getting in. There were empty seats throughout that game. I can confirm that, having seen it with my own eyes. 25 minutes in, there were big chunks of empty seats underneath one of the big screens. Just give us your thoughts and some of the discussions that you've been having, Amanda, online.
So I'm quite passionate about this. So I sit in the East End and I looked left 5 minutes in and I looked at the clock end up and I went, oh my God, there are so many seats. But I thought, it was all right, it's only 5 minutes. People can be late. It's not that easy getting in. So I thought, right, I'm going to look at 25 minutes, exactly the time you said. And there was rows and rows of seats. Now, what I didn't know, so I took a picture and I tweeted it, and I'm no word of a lie, it's still going now while we're online. Since I've taken that picture and said how disgusting this is, I've had over 300 comments. I can't read them all. Thousands and thousands of likes and tweets from people desperate, and I don't even exaggerate this, desperate for tickets. I've had 4 DMs today asking me to get tickets. It's happening every day, yet you've got rows and rows of seats. But what I didn't know was, because I saw I think Guns and Yellow Ribbons, Fergus's picture, under the clock where I couldn't see, there was like even more. And I tweeted and I said, I'm so disappointed to see this. First of all, we're going for the league. There shouldn't be one empty seat. When you looked at the West Upper all the way around the North Bank, to me, I couldn't really see a seat. The odd one, but not really. Even all corporates now taken up, but the clock end was sparse up the top. There was a whole row. Now, I don't know if touts have got it. I don't know if Arsenal have taken season tickets away. I don't know what's gone on. There's been a lot of chat on my... Lots of people responded to me that I've never communicated with before, and most I don't follow and they don't follow me. So this picture has gone wide, and there's a lot of other pictures as well. I am distraught for people. I really, really am. I don't know what's going on, if it's ticket exchange issues, if it's bots buying them. It's got to be touts. You've got the Wolves game, our last game of the season. People are being so offered tickets for £20,000-£25,000. You got the money. If you're a millionaire, it's like 25 quid to you, and I get that. But where are they getting these tickets, and have they even got these tickets? And I am really, really sad for the hundreds of people that are desperate to go, that have been going for years, that have got these red and silver memberships. There's no point in having them. They can't get tickets. Arsenal really need to sort this out. I tweeted Arsenal, not that they're going to listen to me, but I said, you need to sort this out. If you've confiscated these tickets, give them to the people that want to come. But it's just heartbreaking. Chris, we shouldn't have an empty seat. We should have one. We're going for the league. I'm just so upset. And I think it's really interesting. And no one believes me on this. And I really mean this. In the office on Friday, two boys said to me, one's Tottenham, one's West Ham, how much could I buy your ticket for? I said, you couldn't. He said, 20 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand. I went, and I'm honestly looking at them going, there is no amount. Oh, come on. If I gave you a million, I said, I wouldn't sell my ticket for £1 million. You don't get it. We're going for the league. As if I'd sell my ticket for £1 million and sit at home and watch the Arsenal lift if they're going to win it. I say if, I'm still not sure, but if they're going to win it. And this is how the people feel that can't even get a bloody ticket. And I'm upset for them. I don't agree that Arsenal don't care, Phil. I think it's tough for them. What do they do if people are buying tickets and then selling them on? And I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. And Karen said that all I see on a daily basis on Twitter, people begging for tickets and there's empty seats. It's not right. This is 100% true. I can show you DM after DM, people I don't even know asking me to get them tickets. I'm gutted, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs. Certainly, if you are a season ticket, all we can really do is point people towards the ticket exchange. Or if you have a season ticket and you can transfer it to a friend who's got a silver, just make sure you do that. That's the only real thing we can do, and hope that the club are doing something about it. I don't want to cut. We're just about to wrap up, but any final thoughts, just from your perspective, Freddie, and then James, on that ticketing situation?
Yeah, it's really poor. I mean, I remember seeing, you know, when the Wolves game went on sale to silver members, that I think Arsenal blocked something ridiculous, like 500,000 IP addresses, which just shows you the scale of the problem. It's sad that, you know, people are seeing this as such an opportunity to cash in and deprive people that, as Amanda said, have been going for years on silver red memberships when other people couldn't be bothered to go. And now they can't go themselves, which is a real shame. And I think Arsenal have got a lot of work to do. I do agree that they do care about it, but I think that they've been not maybe as proactive as they should have been. They should have foreseen something like this would happen. And also just in general around ticketing at Arsenal, like the website is shocking. Yeah. The buying tickets, the box office system is crap. It's been crap for years. It needs an upheaval. It needs to be much, much better, because I think that would solve at least some of the issue in terms of accessibility. But yeah, the touting and the bots buying up tickets, I mean, they need to do something about it, because it's just not fair.
And final words from you, Cookie, before we then wrap up tonight.
Yeah, Freddie, I think that's a great point you make about the actual website itself, because I mean, we're all very fortunate that we've got season tickets and we don't necessarily have to worry about going on there and face the battles that Red, Silver, Junior Gunners have to face. But we've all been there, you know, I'm sure we have. I've had a Red membership in the past. I've been a Junior Gunner. I've been up at silly o'clock to try and get Arsenal tickets. And whenever I've gone on there just out of curiosity myself, the platform is still the exact same as it was a decade ago, which is just absolutely mental. And the fact that they've not addressed that to make this more accessible and easier for Arsenal fans is just absolutely bonkers. But what I found really suspicious, maybe suspicious isn't the right word, but really curious in yesterday's game in particular, was there were seats scattered about, which I think we can put down to ticket touts, and that kind of is par for the course now at Arsenal. But there was a chasm in the clock end upper in one of the corners, and it was a noticeable chasm of row upon row upon row upon row. And that, to me, just seemed really peculiar, because that can't just be one or two touts, can it? That seems too organised. It seems too premeditated. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, where have those tickets gone? Who has those tickets? And how have the club allowed them to get into the hands of these organisations that are selling tickets? Because if you just Google Arsenal v Wolves tickets, you will find websites that are selling them, whether they're authentic or fakes or whatever. And they're selling them for 5, 6, 7 times the asking price. Because Wolves is a what? Cat C game that would normally go for about 40-odd quid.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is they're going for tens of thousands of pounds now, which is absolutely bonkers. But how are these tickets getting into the hands of these off-brand organizations that aren't Arsenal Football Club? I want to know how that is happening, because I can't, you know, it for me it's like that question of how did the universe start. It's that mind-boggling for me.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's one that we're not going to solve. Hopefully the club are working towards some sort of resolution. I know there's been lots of talk about it. The club have put an announcement on saying about they've blocked all of those IP addresses. They've blocked a load, but there's clearly still more work to be done. Hopefully that can be rectified sooner rather than later. We are out of time for today. Thank you very much, everyone, for putting your comments in the chat. It's been really, really good chatting with the wonderful Amanda. Fabulous, Freddie.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you on, mate. And of course, Captain Cook. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries at all, mate. Great chatting with you all as always.
Yep, we will be back. I think we will be back post-Liverpool game.
Excuse me, young man. Just because you don't want to predict anymore, we need to do predictions. That's how we end the show. And I have to say, as annoying as it is, Carl went for 4-1. He really did. He went for 4-1. I went for 2-1. James went 3-1. And Freddie, you went 3-0, didn't you? Mm. But he actually went 4-1. So well done, Carl.
Yeah.
Right, what's your prediction, Chris, for next week?
There will be a football match that will be played in Liverpool and I will have an Easter Sunday roast. That is my prediction.
I think Jesus will be even more resurrected come Easter Sunday. Freddie, have you got the balls to actually predict next week?
I know there'll probably be, well, hopefully there's not any aggregators listening that are going to now tweet this prediction publicly, but 2-1 Arsenal, I'm going to say 2-1. Let's be optimistic. But I'll change my mind before the game and I'll be convinced we're going to lose 4-0. But no, 2-1, I'll go for it now.
Go on, Cooks, because Chris doesn't want to do it.
I'm going to go 2-0. I'd love to see a carbon copy of that away performance to Spurs. And if it was the exact same scorers as well on the day, not Lloris' own goal, obviously, but Saka putting it in the back of the net and a great finish from Ødegaard, that would be an absolutely perfect performance from me.
Okay, so I'm going 1-0. 1-0 to the Arsenal. That's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be a dodgy, squeaky bum time sort of game. I don't think we're going to put in our best performance, if I'm honest. I'm sort of predicting the whole thing here. I could be completely wrong. But I think we're going to nick it. I really do. And I think it's going to be one of those games where we're all going to feel sick until we blow that final whistle.
Yep. Certainly. And on that note, I tell you what, I'll bite your hand off for a draw, to be honest with you right now.
Yeah.
Let's just take a draw and,
move
on. But thank you very much to everyone for joining us. Thank you, everyone in the chat. It's been wonderful chatting with you guys. Fingers crossed, 9 more to go, 9 more cup finals. And let's hope that this time next week, we're talking about 8 more cup finals and there is still an 8-point lead over those horrible citizens that are based in Manchester. Thanks to Freddie, Cookie, and of course, Amanda and me. Hope to see you next time. Thank you very much. See you later, guys.
Sports Social Podcast Network.